SB Nation and Underdog Dynasty present the Underdog Podcast.
And we are back with another edition of the Underdog Dynasty Podcast, AAC edition. My name is Dan Morrison. That is Emily Van Busker. How are you doing today, Emily?
I'm doing great. I feel like people might be missing us a little bit since it's been a while.
It has, since you and I just solo recorded.
Yeah, just us.
We had the team record for the pre-draft things. And then
that was
wild.
I couldn't even listen back to that because I was just like, I don't want to know the things that I said in there.
Thick. That was the bit. My big takeaway
is you like thick. I stand by the thickness quotient.
You like a curvy
still,
quarterback.
Yeah.
I'm
saying it's not that I like it. It's that I think it's necessary, and I think there's a direct correlation to how well your longevity in the league.
I think that's
not
directly
that correlates.
Sturdier people are going to be sturdier. Mm-hmm. Is I think another way to put that.
Right. It's just more fun to say thick. Thick thighs save lives.
I know what you're getting at. Like a big Ben Roethlisberger type, he can be injured and play through because he's a big enough guy to ignore it sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas a let's say Kirk Cousins type might not be. But he hasn't had injury issues, so I'm not going to put that on him. But like,
Well, it's not that they won't, but they won't take the risks.
Mariota helped out. Marcus Mariota struggled with that kind of thing. He's a little older guy.
Sure. He's slight. He's not little.
He's 6'3", but he's not jacked or anything like that.
Right. He's just not a big, and that's my issue with that is I was looking up weights and heights just today because I was having a discussion about Grayson McCall, and at first glance and like eye test, having seen him play in person, I think he's a pretty thick quarterback, but I look at his height, he's 6'3", 210. It doesn't.
I wouldn't have even had him that big. Like I'm only on TV,
right?
Mind you. Like he's a guy I love watching.
He's like, he's sturdy and he's really fun. I think he's going to be he's definitely being slept on a little bit this year, but anyway, so it's not always a stat thing. It's a gut feeling. It's an eye test metric. So you just kind of have to, you either know what thick is or you don't, but it's some guys have it.
And you know how to spell it when you see it. Is it two C's? Is it three C's? Is there a K in there? If there's a K in
that's
the hefty lefty Jared Lorenzen kind of thick.
Well, we hope you guys enjoyed that mega podcast because it was fun.
It was good. It was fun. I wouldn't hate doing it more often with those guys. There's just got to be a good reason for it. And like, hey, it's August 1st. Let's do a mega podcast. It would just be mayhem. But
let's just do one for my birthday in August. That'll be fun.
Sure.
You guys can just roast me the entire time for like every take I've ever had.
How old are you turning, Emily? No, we're not doing
never,
that here.
Never.
Not on this platform.
Never on any platform ever.
Okay, fair enough. We're going to talk a little bit about the draft and what happened for the AAC specifically in a little bit, and maybe even a little broadly speaking. We'll see how it goes. I can't promise we don't get on tangents. Just can't do it. But first, we've got a couple other things to talk about. The first is a little bit of a newsy item just to get out there. We know that Cincinnati, Houston, UCF are leaving the AAC. It's been news. We've known that for going on a year now. Not quite a year, but like 9 months, whatever it has been. Mm-hmm. It's officially going to be for the start of the 2023-24 academic calendar.
Which is crazy. I did not think it would be that quick. I know you guys, everybody thought that. I'm shocked. Yeah,
this was the expectation because the expectation was that the playoff format would be changing and Texas and Oklahoma would be leaving for the SEC right away. And the Big 12 was going to need to backfill right away too. That's all been put on hiatus. So there's going to be like this awkward transition period now where those three schools are with Texas and Oklahoma and the Big 12 for a little while too. Also BYU's moving in, they're independent, easier for them. Doesn't really matter.
Right.
They're paying each $17 to $20 million is the number being reported. I think first by Brett McMurphy was the first person to report that.
Yeah, it's weird to see his name with Action Network HQ. It's cool.
I was expecting stadium.
Yeah,
but yeah,
I don't pay. No, I got to hang out with some of the Action Network people, including Darren.
Norvell.
Yes. I was thinking Norvell because I had just been looking at it. Anyways, Darren Norvell. Yeah.
I was going to say not to immediately like cut you off, What's he like in person? Because his Twitter's frightening.
It was funny. Like I was at this, we had been invited to their happy hour at Circa. And so I went because I know one of the girls, Samantha, who works for them. So I was excited to see her. And then I went with a couple friends. And so we met, some of the higher ups, and then Darren Revelle was there, but he got in the pool like pretty early on. So okay, I didn't see him
exactly what I'd expect him to do is be.
Yeah. It's all over Twitter. Like there's a video of it, but like he got in the pool. Yeah.
He's got a couple of the cringiest tweets of all time. And I think he does it on purpose, but do you remember that time on the anniversary of the JFK assassination, he posted a photo of JFK's head being blown to bits. Like before you'd poured your I think it was deleted by the time the West Coast woke up, but the East Coast woke up, opened up Twitter and was like, it's all over Jackie. All over Jackie. Yeah. Onassis is her husband's brain.
I never saw that. I mean, he definitely reminded me of like a dad joke kind of guy when I interacted with him.
That's what a lot of
his
Twitter is, but every now and again, it's cringy stuff. And that's my knowledge.
He was fine. And then Matt Berry was there, which was, because I'd never met him. So that was very interesting.
Matt Berry is another guy who went viral on Twitter recently.
He's a very dominating personality in person. Like you can't really get a word in edgewise. And he was actually not very interested in meeting myself or my female colleague at all. So
I didn't like his recent tweet. I'm not going to get into it now because it'd be a complete tangent and it'd be unrelated to the AAC. It'd be more college sports in general. But based on that recent tweet, it doesn't surprise me because he seems like an old school kind of do it the way it's always been. Don't change how I like it kind of guy.
Right. It was whatever, but I will say the Action Network people were great. I'm excited to see kind of what they do. And, we pitched our Joey Chestnut thing to them and, I think it's really cool. So it was a great party. It was really fun to meet them, see them. I was surprised though. I didn't realize Matt McMurphy was working with them. So when I saw that tweet that you're talking about, I was like, oh, okay.
Caught me off guard that he was working for them in that stadium anymore.
A lot of moves this offseason, especially for media. We're going to see a lot of stuff, but definitely surprised that this is going to be happening in 2023. Not surprised by how much money it's going to take. Not at all.
We talked about on this show before that the AAC was reported, according to the Houston Chronicle, reportedly seeking $35 million. This is about half of that number, give or take. A lot closer to UConn paid $17 million when they left.
$17 to $20 million.
That's UConn set a precedent when they left, and the AAC might have stopped more, but the lawyers said no. Precedent said you want to call inflation, we'll give you an extra million or two.
Right. Exactly. I think 20 is. I mean, this is just it's crazy to me that we're even having this conversation about that much money with everything going on in the world. So it's like to me, this is like an insane thing to be talking about, but like.
What's wild?
Here we are.
Like, it's such a drop in the bucket for everyone. Like, because the three schools leaving see it as an investment because they're going to the Big 12 where they're going to be making more annually, just inherently.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
This media deal is bigger there, blah, blah, blah. Don't get it right away. They'll transition into getting the full amount the way. Like, do you know Rutgers still doesn't get a full Big 10 payout? A decade later.
Yeah, because they're Rutgers and they're the worst.
I don't know why the Big Ten got them. I do know. We want the New York media market because Rutgers is a New York school. No, it's dumb.
Literally, people could not care less about Rutgers. I'll tell you that.
Like, I know I also know why they got Maryland. We got to get the DC media market. Yeah, how'd that like?
Yeah, I mean, Maryland at least has a little more like history and tradition and like.
And it's all dead now that they're in the Big Ten. Because it's
gonna
impossible
come back.
To be competitive.
It's gonna, Mike Loxley is going to have this program on the up and up.
Into a Big Ten East podcast, but it doesn't matter.
You would love nothing more than to do that, I feel like.
Okay, I'm going to say real quick. It doesn't matter how good Maryland gets because they have to play Michigan, Ohio State, Michigan State, and Penn State every year, and the odds are it's just historically impossible to be better than all four of those for Maryland.
Of course. I don't think they're ever going to be pinnacle of the conference, but I do think that Michael Loxley can get them to a place where they can do some damage against those teams. Like it's going to be like, oh, we have to go to Maryland this week.
Yeah.
I think they're going to cause problems. They're going to make it more difficult and teams are going to have to be more prepared when they come into the stadium there in Maryland, because right now it's been a joke. Right. And Loxley is not that guy. Like he is I think it's, I'm excited to see the state of how that turns around. So
he's an excellent recruiter.
He's a dude. I like him. Anyways,
he's got some talent in there. Back to what I was
back
saying.
Back to our AC schools.
Yeah, back to my 2 minutes of news. I think where I'm at 10 of. yeah. So they're leaving for that amount of money. It's similar to what UConn paid, blah, blah, blah. That's all checks out. That would leave the AAC at 8 schools for the 2023 season. Mm-hmm. That's why I don't think that they're going to let that happen. I think they're going to, the rumor is that the 6 CUSA schools coming over are going to be added before that year.
July 1st, right?
July 1st of 2023.
Yeah.
Yeah. Nothing's official on that front.
But usually these rumors have been true. So whoever's getting this information has been doing well.
The rumors are pretty accurate. And logically, it just makes sense. The AAC is not going to want to play a season with 8 teams. It's just
I would love it because it'd be less work each week for me, but
focus a little bit more on the team still there.
Yes, it wouldn't be so crazy,
but it doesn't make, it's not a good
of
idea.
Course. It's not good for fans. It's not good for football. I get it, of course. So we'll be looking to see when those 6 schools make it official that they'll be joining, which I'm sure will be coming soon. That news has to be.
Yeah, I know CUSA
can't be far off.
CUSA made it a pain in the backside for the Sun Belt schools to leave, where they were like refusing to negotiate a buyout settlement. Mm-hmm. And those Sun Belt schools basically said, well, we're gone and the lawyers can handle it. So hopefully CUSA like doesn't do that again with these schools. But who knows? Maybe they're just really embarrassed and digging their heels and they're going to be like, all right, let the lawyers handle it. But you're going to have to say it. I don't know.
Say it.
Who knows? It's a possible saga. I'm sure that Joe and Eric have a lot more on what the likelihood of the timing is on that. Is there?
I'll start doing some digging too. I have not been paying attention because of everything that's been going on, but I will start reaching out to some contacts because I do have some Conference USA friends as well as the AAC friends that I've made. So let's use those and work at it. But since we're talking about news, can I just sidebar with those 6 conference schools within that? This will be within the parameter, so it's relevant. What the heck is going on with Rice?
Did I miss and I something bet you other than not, the bean rice?
I bet you did say, not see that coming.
I'm unprepared for rice talk.
So I will just say this quickly. There was some stuff on Twitter, and maybe this just went under the radar because I actually immediately texted Sam Kahn Jr. from The Athletic, who's a good friend of mine who covers Texas schools. Mm-hmm. And I was like, yo, what is going on with this Mike Bloomgren talk? And he didn't even know until I sent him the tweet. But basically the daily like school newspaper at Rice released a story. It's on my Twitter. I actually didn't even want to retweet it because I don't believe it. But it basically talked to players both anonymously and on the record, although it was very few on the record. And they went by like, I think maybe 2 had their full names. The rest just went by aliases, which to me is like a big red flag. But they basically said that everyone hates Mike Bloomgren, that he's not a good head coach. Like he abuses the players verbally and is like just an asshole. And I'm sitting here like, I know Mike Bloomgren. Now, granted, I'm not a player, so I can't speak to, you know, how it goes on the football field, but I've known him for years when he was at Stanford. And as a female in this industry, you find out pretty quickly, like who are the good guys and who are not the good guys because of how they treat you, you know, how they act. And like, you kind of see pretty quickly through people. And Bloomgren has been one of my favorite coaches that I've been around, has always been respectful and helpful. And I have not heard these things from players ever before. So I'm sitting here reading these things like, what is going on? And I just didn't know if you had seen that or
no. And I'm like, I'm listening to you, but I'm also like trying to find it.
I know you're trying to find it. Yeah.
And I can't find it right now.
I'll send it to you. Actually.
I'm looking at
this was a little while ago.
Twitter right now, and he doesn't have anything about it. It doesn't look like.
Oh my God. Fun fact just now, Gary Patterson just sent me a message on Twitter.
Hook him.
I just opened my Twitter DMs to go find this. And the first one is Gary Patterson. I love coach Patterson. He and I go way back. Okay. Haven't heard from him in a minute, but I want to have
him on a little bit of a transitional month or two.
Yeah.
Can we talk about how weird he looks in orange? How weird it is.
I love that he embraced like his music and all that stuff and like went for it. So here's the article. Let me see if it's still up because maybe it's been taken down. Yeah, here it is. I'm going to send it to you. It's in the Rice Thresher. And it's the Rice University student newspaper. The title is, "I've always loved football until he came. Players say Blomgren has lost the locker room." So I'm going to message this to you right now.
It's also,
and see, I mean, you could,
it's sometimes hard to tell because there is a transition going on right now in the way you coach football, where if you're old school, right, it is, a lot of guys don't want to be coached in that old school way, which I wouldn't have wanted to be coached in that old school way because I don't like getting yelled at. Like, and, but like,
I'm there, like, is tough, there is a football, you know, like, what,
like, but like, that's the thing, is like, some coaches do coach like that. I don't know if I should take
there
the time
is
to
no
just read
coach,
that straight up while we're on air.
There's
right now,
no coach in college football that is using compliments to get things done. Okay. This is just not the sport for that. And
I think
if you came in looking for PC Gen Z feelings coaching, that is not.
There's definitely different styles still, though. Like, there's the style
that's
where,
fair.
Like, there is a style where it's more positive reinforcement versus negative, but it's football. I can't imagine that no one who plays FBS football, no matter what the school is, and Rice is not a football school. I don't know if that needs to be said. It's not really any type of sports school. It's an academic school, which that's, I should say, it's not bad to be an academic school. Tulane. Bunch of nerds.
Also going to go on the record and say this, as a sports writer who has tried to get players to come forward with things like this in other programs, Stanford, it is extremely difficult to get guys to speak out. So the fact that some people went on the record here actually to say these things, and there was this many people that, like,
it's really suspect to me
because the guys that I know would not, like, mm-hmm. do that.
It's reminiscent of what happened at Hawaii over the offseason, to be honest, with Todd Graham in the SFGate article, where that was the first time I've ever actually seen guys go on the record at all for, like, coaches mean or, like, rude, bullying, whatever you want to call it. And, like, that obviously blew up big time in Todd Graham's in the Hawaii program, I should say, not just Todd Graham's face, but the Hawaii athletic director. There were calls for his resignation after that because he has done some things. Not to derail us and talk too much about Hawaii, but that was, he's done some things that derailed the program. That was like this microcosm of it. And that led to like a state Senate hearing about what's going on at Hawaii football, which is never where you want your thing, your program to end up, is in front of the state Senate explaining what happened. But yeah, it's very reminiscent of that. I will read that article not while we're not on the air, because I feel like,
we can talk about it next time.
I was going to say, that's bad audio, if we're being honest, is me going.
Yeah, I'll just say this. I know Mike Blomgren. I've been around him. I've covered Rice when he's been there. Yeah, I covered him at Stanford. He was the offensive coordinator under David Shaw for many years. You know, he's a good, like, as far as I know, he's a good guy. I've covered him at Rice. I've never come across that problem in any of my dealings with the players or the administration or anybody. So I don't believe this for a second. And I would be very cautious with what we read about it and what's actually true.
And that's the only place I've seen it reported. The SF Gate one, like I said, about why immediately blew up all over the place.
Right.
Like, which tells you there's,
but that shocked me too, because I know Todd Graham.
We talked
that
about
shocked
that
me as well. But
I don't know if we did on air, but we definitely talked
about
it.
Yeah, we did. We talked about it. And that it's still shocking because he was not like that at ASU. And I don't know if this was just maybe because he was very desperate to, like, be back in coaching and he just went about it the wrong way. Yeah. I don't know.
I think losing and stress also brings out certain things in coaches that you don't always see, you know,
which is what I was worried about with Sark at Texas. Like, the stress that job has, I really am afraid that it would bring back some demons for him. So, like, I'm still nervous about that.
And I think that's, like, I hate when we break down people based on their, like,
I know,
stuff like that. But Ian Rappaport, the NFL reporter, when Matt Corral got drafted, and you're not a huge fan of Matt Corral, and I know that, but he framed why did Matt Corral slide as, well, Matt Corral has drinking problems, which was like, he partied a little bit when he got to Ole Miss, which, like, that's what people do when they go to Ole Miss, is they party a bit. You know what I mean? And then he also admitted he has depression, which, like, that doesn't seem like a reason why anyone should slide. And, like, the framing of, well, he admitted it. That was the issue, is that he admitted it, not that he has it. Like, those things I didn't like, but, like, they are things that happen.
Yeah. You know what I mean? I know it happens. I know this stuff goes on, but I wanted to speak on it because I had personal reference for that specific one. And it was something I was very surprised about as a school that's coming into the AAC. If there is going to be turmoil like this within the program, this will be interesting to watch as they come in to a new conference, because that's even harder to navigate. So you have to wonder if there is any claims to what these people are saying, if they're going to investigate it, if there's going to be even more shakeup. Like, you want to keep an eye on stuff like that with new schools that are coming in, if there's turmoil like that. So I thought that was interesting that Rice is going through that. So, all right, that is enough about our news pieces. I think we all learned a little something from our news session there, but let's move on to the NFL draft. Ooh. So much to say. I'm sure everybody out there enjoyed it. I'm very curious to see your thoughts, because obviously I was there, which was beautifully, frighteningly terrifying, but amazing. It was a lot of emotions. So I'm curious what the experience watching from home was like. You know, was it good camera angles? Was it good feed? Did you get a good feel for like what it was like there?
It looked like it was happening in like a sunny tunnel to me, in a way. And maybe that's like not
actually the very
like mm-hmm. I should say I had the ESPN broadcast on muted because okay. I don't like Mel Kiper and what he has to say as a rule. And
okay, sure.
I actually just don't like the way ESPN pundits often talk about things. And I actually had a stream going on that was more laid back. It was still ESPN. It was an ESPN stream, but it was like Spencer Hall and Mina Kimes and a few other people like that, where it was just like, they didn't feel the need to be buttoned up and they were just kind of joking around and goofing. And like, that was pretty fun. Cause they're like, oh, someone just told me the next pick. I don't think I should say it. Then they're like, someone just told me, who do you have? And they're like, oh, we got different picks here. Which one of us was like, whose source is dumb? And that was fun. But
yeah,
that was only like day one that I had it like that.
Well, yeah. So listen to this. So we got to Vegas. Let's see. Kim got there Monday. My other coworker got there Monday. I ended up going Wednesday because I could not deal being there that long. It's too much to be in Vegas. So they're there. They do the whole preview walkthrough, which was great because they got to see the purple carpet and they got to see the stage and everything before. So we were able to give people a sneak peek. The purple carpet, okay, was, I'm not sure if you understood this, but it was over the fountains, right? They set it up over.
No,
it.
So you couldn't. Very limited. I at least couldn't tell that.
Yeah. So, okay, great. Because like, that was the whole point why they were doing it, was so that people could see it. But so many things wrong with this. It was limited for media. There was like nobody that got credentialed for the red carpet, unless you were literally doing on camera for the top networks, you know? So none of us actually even got credentialed to that of my group. Then they have it set up where you like walk up onto the red carpet, you go across it and it's on the Bellagio fountain. And they're doing the test runs in the morning. It's getting soaked because they're trying to have the fountains go off behind it as like a visual, but it's completely soaking the carpet. So then they're figuring out how to dial that back and everything. Mm-hmm. And that was the only part of the draft that was there. So it was like an hour. Mm-hmm. They shut down Las Vegas Boulevard for that. An hour, and then that was it. And then the rest of the draft was over at Caesars Forum, where the main stage was and all of the, you know, the fan experience and everything.
Well, so, they had the card set up and everything like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, it was so stupid to do, in my opinion, to have that going on there, you know, and then do the rest over there. They should have just had everything at Caesars. Would have been way better. It was so spacious and great. You know, the media center was awesome. The green room with the players was right next door to us, so we could see that. It was great. I think the draft experience was incredible. You got to go in, do all these different things and buy gear. And they had autograph sessions with players. And it was just really, I thought that part was really well done. So,
Let me ask you this. To prepare for your trip to Vegas covering an event, did you read Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas?
No.
And did you try to mimic it?
No, I did not. I was just trying to stay alive. Okay.
Do people know how good of a sports writer Hunter S. Thompson was?
I don't think they do.
Because if you haven't, you should read Fear and Loathing at the Kentucky Derby. Or no, sorry, okay. That's not what it's called. Kentucky Derby is Depraved and Dangerous, I think. It was like a Sports Illustrated piece. It's incredible. It's like when he invented gonzo journalism, though. It's just him getting drunk at the Kentucky Derby and like his like style. And it's great.
Okay. I will take your word for that.
I believe he was writing for ESPN when he died. But Anyways, it was not to get sidebarred. It was like, I don't know.
It was a lot.
I still think ever since they left Radio City, which I'm fine with the new format. I don't know if you're like a Radio City purist. I know some people are like, why'd they ever take it out?
Yeah.
I still think that to this day, the best they've been able to do at a city venue was Nashville.
Oh my God. Don't even get me started. Incredible. And I covered that one too. So I have some point of reference. Mm-hmm. It was amazing because all roads led it dead. Broadway dead ended into the stage and the experience. It was incredible. But I will say this, I don't know if you guys saw, but on my Twitter, we did a behind the scenes tour with the people that make the jerseys for the first round picks on stage. And they're a company called Stalls. They're a heat press company. And I've been working with them since Nashville. I did my first story on them. And this year they invited us backstage before the draft and gave us like a preview. So they walked us through, you know, how they pick the jersey out and then where it goes on the table. And they put out all the heat transfer stuff to press the name. And then they have the machine back there and it's 10 seconds.
Yeah, yeah. You had a really, really cool video of it on your Twitter account. If people want to go back,
it was really neat. Yeah. I think it's worth checking out because it's something people don't realize. Like, where did those jerseys come from? How are they made so quickly? So what the cool part is that Stalls in there, they have a bunch of people. They're incredible people, by the way. So shout out Stalls, but they have a group of people and they get to pick maybe, I don't know, 30, not even maybe, I don't know how many seconds they get it before everyone else, but they get it early. And then they have 60 seconds to grab the right jersey, grab the right name and press it and get it out to the commissioner on stage. So
it's high pressure. That's a high pressure job.
It's super high pressure. Honestly, it's the most impressive part of the draft to me. I mean, obviously these guys have worked really hard to get there and they're the number one thing, but of the production, I think it's super interesting.
The behind the scenes stuff, certainly.
Yeah, exactly. So we got to like walk backstage and see that and do that. So that was really an incredible experience getting to see those jerseys before the guys had them. We were able to like see them where they are. And so that was really neat. I really enjoyed that for day one. And then obviously like I got to talk to all the guys that were there. So like Sauce Gardner was one of the, you know, first guys off the board for, especially then for AAC. Yes. And so, but he didn't come in and do his interview until way, way later. For some reason, like he was really delayed. Cause you know,
did you see him get lost on the way to the stage?
No, but that doesn't surprise me because when you're walking back there, it's like this hallway of cards and it's not really clear. We got lost too. It's not really clear where you're going. So that did not surprise me at all.
And he was such an early pick. I think that they put someone like, hey, stand over there and direct the guys.
Right.
Sauce Gardner. I tweeted this and I put it as a fun fact into an article I wrote.
Yes.
The highest AAC draft pick since Blake Bortles, taken third overall in 2014, who was actually the first player ever drafted out of the AAC. I think that's a little full circle stuff, except, you know, it's not like the AAC's last draft ever, but.
I thought it was a really good note and, you know, shout out to you for that because it did lead me to ask that question of him. And so I was able to ask him that. And if you saw the interviews or you can just go to Twitter, he talked about, you know, what it means for himself as a representative of the conference and small ball everywhere, you know, group of five. And I thought he had a really good answer. And it was funny, right when I went to ask the question, this guy over on the other side of the room literally starts to ask the same exact question. It sounds like we actually say the same thing. It was
like
it was
you're reading cue cards and forgot whose cue card
it was. It was bizarre. And you see, I have a video of it. You see Sauce and he looks over, he's looking at me because I kind of spoke first. And then he looks over at the guy and he's just like, he looks back at me. He's like, that was crazy. Like you guys just said that at the same time. And I let the other guy go. And he asked a question about something, being a pick for Cincinnati. And then I asked my question about the conference, but it was a trip because, you know, I hadn't thought anyone would have that kind of information except for us, but.
Do you know who the guy was or who he wrote for by chance? Just out of my own curiosity.
I don't, it's in the video I have. So I'll go look, but it was just such a trip. I don't know. I didn't post that part.
Or did you send me the video of it?
I'll send it to you.
I was going to say, you either sent it to me or saw something on your Twitter, his answer, because I believe I think it's on your Twitter because I'm pretty sure I put your like into an article I wrote. So
it was a good question. And you and I were workshopping that for, you know, minutes before. So I appreciate your help with that.
No, of course. What do you think though, not to actually talk about the football of it, do you think the Jets are a good fit?
I mean, are the Jets ever a good fit for anybody?
They're a good fit for Darrell Revis.
Yes. Okay. So I think it's,
that was a decade
I don't think
ago.
That the Jets know if they, the problem is that I don't think the Jets know if they're a good fit for somebody. So I think time will tell. I'm so apprehensive to be like, yeah, this is going to be great. Like, this is going to work out. We don't know. Yeah. We don't know what's going to happen for him. Is he likely going to have a great career? Of course, because he's a competitor. He's an athlete, but
you don't get drafted number four overall unless you, right. The odds are good.
They're pretty good, but they're not certain because there's a lot of busts that have been drafted high that don't pan out because it's a different game. So do I have concerns over the fact that he did play in a group of five, you know, conference, that he didn't play in that power five, that he is a little bit small?
So a little bit small, maybe when it comes to run support. I don't have too many concerns about him playing a group of five, because when they went to play Alabama made their whole offensive game plan the other go run other way. And I mean, don't get me wrong, other way ended up working, but their whole right. There's a reason they made their game plan other way. You know,
I mean, it's just a different level of competition. It's going to be faster, it's going to be stronger. So I'm curious to see his transformation now that he's done with college and he can dedicate the time to his body and his craft. What happens for him as he progresses? So I'm excited. It'll be
my
fun.
Biggest concern is if he's going to be a little too handsy and get called for a little too many holding.
He's a very confident young man.
Oh, absolutely. Real quick trivia question for you.
Yeah.
Who are the three AAC players to be drafted top 10?
Blake Bortles, Ed Oliver, Sauce Gardner.
Yeah. And what do they all have in common?
They're teams that left for the Big 12.
They're all leaving for the Big 12. Yep.
I read your article, Dan. Okay.
Oh, God damn it. You're reading. Okay.
I'm going to know.
I think it's important to note that the teams, and this is a little bit off topic from the draft, but it is important to remember that the teams leaving are the most talented ones. And that's ultimately what it comes down to, is they're the ones who produce on the field. And
well, it just means that there's going to be most talented teams. So I look forward to seeing who will step up.
Speaking of talented and stepping up, Tulsa with first-round draft picks and back-to-back seasons for the first time in their school's history.
Epic.
I did not see that coming.
People's faces when they heard – I know, no one did.
I thought he was a second or third faces, guy.
Yeah, I think people – but you know what? That's the Cowboys for you, because they do things like that. Mm-hmm. That only they understand, but it will make sense. And I think he's a hell of a player. So I was excited to see Tyler Smith go off the board.
And early. You know, Tyler Smith has the same problem that Sauce Gardner has, actually, where he's a little handsy, grabs and holds a little too much. A bunch of holding calls in particular called on him, which, like, I think that's better than being too physical. It's being better than not physical enough at offensive line, for sure.
Yeah.
And the Cowboys have turnover. So I think he's going to play as a rookie. I think he'll be fine.
I'm excited to see the combination of him and Tyler Biadasz, who is a guy that I championed in that draft and knew was going to be great for them, and was excited to see him get that, you know, chance to start. And he's an incredible center. So I'm excited to see them work together. And I think the Cowboys offensive line is going to be, it's going to be good. So.
Yeah, 3 second round picks, Logan Hall, Alec Pearson, Brian Cook. Again, we're talking Houston and two guys from Cincinnati. Any of those jump out to you?
I was excited for Alec Pearson because as much as I don't like him that much as
like a person.
I didn't like his personality. I do think he's an incredible player. So I love to see him go to a team and
I think that's a good landing spot for him in Indianapolis. Mm-hmm. I thought it was a little bit of a reach in the second round. I think that Alec Pierce's athleticism is a limiting factor. That's all. Mm-hmm. Good technically sound wide receiver. He doesn't, to me, have as much upside as other guys do.
Yeah.
As Logan Hall, I think, is one of those guys the NFL loves because he's a high upside guy. In that same respect, if you look at him, he's got all the natural tools to be great. And that's why he was very nearly a first round pick.
Yeah, he was close.
Mm-hmm.
I want to talk about the third round guys. Yeah, I know Desmond Ritter. Yeah.
Desmond Ritter, all the quarterbacks fell off a bit. Some people had Ritter as a first round guy.
I was dying laughing because I have been telling people from the start that this is not a quarterback class, and everybody knew that, but people wanted to pretend like these guys were going to go high. Why would you waste a high draft pick on a subpar quarterback?
If I was Atlanta, who Desmond Ridder was drafted by,
yes,
why would I take, first up, don't take him in the first round if you can him in third. That's a basic rule. Hey, Bill Belichick, yeah, drafting Cole Strange in the first round. That's a basic rule. Anyways, not to be distracted by my Patriots. yeah, if I'm the Falcons, I need a quarterback. Like, you're going in with Marcus Mariota, and you go,
yeah,
you're going to go with two things. Either we look at this draft class and say, oh, no, thank you. Either we're going to be reaching for Matt Corral or, you know, Sam Howell or someone like that who we're not sold on. Or, hear me out, you build around your quarterback before you have the quarterback, which is, I think, what a lot of teams chose to do. They said, oh, we need a quarterback, but we also need wide receivers, and there's a ton of great ones. You know, why don't we get those guys in offensive linemen so that next year, when guys like Bryce Young and CJ Stroud are available, we can get them hypothetically. Obviously, you don't know how it's going to break down. And already have the team around them, which I think makes sense. It's why the quarterbacks fell, including Ridder. A lot of people are very high on Ridder for his decision-making and for his leadership qualities.
Mm-hmm.
The accuracy is bad, though. Like, it really is. His downfield throwing is not accurate, and that's a concern in the NFL, where you need to be deadly accurate. And I know that now that Josh Allen proved that some guys can be coached up to have better accuracy, everyone wants to believe that every guy can. But Josh Allen's the exception, not the rule. You know?
Yeah, he is definitely the exception.
He's also got like three Pro Bowl wide receivers that he's throwing to, which doesn't hurt. It doesn't. You know what I mean? It doesn't hurt that they got Stephon Diggs and his ability to throw 80 yards and have a guy run under it all of a sudden materialized. You know?
Yeah, I was more excited for Marcus Jones to go to your Patriots than Desmond Ridder.
Super happy. I mean, that was like the only draft pick the Patriots made that I was happy about, to be honest.
Yeah, it was a good one because he's going to be late third round. Well, I guess it's like middle. Well,
it was like a middle
late. Yeah.
Well, with the with the compensatory picks, it was middle, but like, you know, whatever.
I thought that was good for him, and like, it's going to fuel him a little bit, you know. Yeah.
Okay, so he's going to be able to do a few things in New England. First off, the Patriots need corners, so he's going to be able to compete to be on the field as a corner because it's just a hole on that team. The Patriots also need a returner in special. Like, Matthew Slater is one of the greatest special teamers of all time. I think he retired, if he's not at the very twilight of his career. Gunnar Ozleski is not
your long-term. I love Gunnar.
He's been returning punts. I don't want him returning punts anymore. It's fine.
He's like a loose cannon, and I love him so much. I know. I think Marcus Jones would be way better.
But I know. Get him returning kicks. You know, maybe put him in the slot as a nickel corner.
Mm.
And I think give him time to see if I don't know with his height that he's ever an outside corner in the NFL, and that's the trick to Marcus Jones, is how can you put a 6'4" wide receiver on him on the goal line and expect him to win that battle?
Yeah, but he's a hell of a gamer. I love
him. He's always around the ball. Yeah, he's always around the ball, and I love that pick for the Patriots. I do.
That was one of my favorites. Honestly, if we're talking about favorite AAC picks, it was that one, or it was Calvin Austin in the fourth to the Steelers. That was a steal
in the fourth, I think.
Yeah, I think, very excited to see what he does.
I also think your Bay Area 49ers with Danny Gray in the third was an interesting.
Yes, one. I actually like that for them though, because Danny Gray was a guy I was looking
injury
forward.
Issues, but
yeah. But I was looking forward to seeing him with a team that values offensive weapons like that in an untraditional way, because I don't
see
him as very traditional.
It looks like Debo's probably moving on. We don't know.
Who knows? I'm so
tired. He asked for a trade. Like, not to get too NFL rumory. But either way, if the way they use Debo Samuel is any indicator, Kyle Shanahan knows how to use a good wide receiver.
I'm also like, can the man just live? Like, can we just like let him live? Like, I swear, people are like, God, it's become Debo mania. I'm like, let the man go. Like, if he wants to go somewhere, people should just be able to go. Like, if there's a work. Well, I'm saying we don't need to harass him from a media standpoint the way
that's fair.
Doing.
That's fair. I think
it's too much.
It's the off season. People, media especially, latches on too much. And
Yeah,
I think a lot of NFL.
I get it that we don't have anything better to do, but Jesus,
I think NFL media coverage, especially around the draft and player movement, tends to be a little bit gross.
Yeah, but
that's just me. I thought Jerome Ford going to Cleveland was an interesting spot for him. Staying in Ohio, really good running back room. So maybe a little tough to find the ball, but a good place to learn and develop at the same time.
Agreed. It's going to be really good. I liked where all the lower round guys pretty much landed. Like I didn't have any, I thought the AAC did really well in the staggering of like where everybody went, good matches for them. Like I think of all the conferences, they were the most consistent with, oh, okay, that makes sense for this guy. That's going to be a good fit for this guy. So
yeah,
I liked it. It was a good draft. It was a good draft for the AAC. I feel like you should be happy.
It's I assume you get the press releases like for immediate release emails from the AAC. There was the one with, I think they said in one of those that it was the for back-to-back years that most players ever drafted for the conference with 19 total. So yeah. The AAC is in good shape as far as that's concerned. The question is, will they be in good shape once Cincinnati's 9 draft picks and Houston's 3 draft picks and UCF had 1 draft pick too this year? Though
Memphis had,
and SMU had a few guys drafted each.
Yeah, so I think I tweeted something about that. Memphis set a record for something. I'd have to go back and look, but they did very well. And I think that and the SMU stuff, like you said, bodes well for the conference. Because when Memphis can step up and be strong, and there's a lot of talent on Memphis rosters, it just doesn't always translate into wins during the season. But I think we're going to see a shift in that now.
The trick with Memphis is I don't think that Ryan Silverfield is going to be in that job for too much longer. And that maybe is like unfair to like predict right here. But like, you know, I think that he is in a position where he needs desperately to figure out the defense. And he's also suffering from the comparisons to the two coaches before him. They're Justin Fuente and Mike Norvell, who both did very well. You know, Fuente turned the program into an AAC power, and Norvell took them to the Cotton Bowl and actually won the conference, you know, outright. And unfortunately, when you follow up that act and you, even if it's not your fault that all the talent immediately graduated and you have to kind of reset the roster a little bit, people are going to notice that you went from being 10-2 to 6-6, you know?
Yeah.
And they're going to get antsy and like, what's wrong?
This year is going to be very telling year for him.
And he's got a new defensive coordinator because Mike McIntyre took the FIU job. Yeah.
And he's got a new offensive coordinator in his second year. So, in his first year. Wait, was Kramsey there last year? No.
I can't remember.
Yeah.
I thought he was.
Yeah. Losing track of all the years. But either way.
He's got a still a very young quarterback. Yes. To step in again. You're replacing Calvin Austin, who was by far your best player. The identity you had under Mike Norvell as a running spread team is kind of gone because you can't run the ball like that anymore. There's concern.
Yeah.
No, that's not to get sidetracked. We'll do at some point this summer, I'm sure, individual team previews where we can talk more deeply about those things. But Memphis and SMU do have to rise and be the top of the program and the top of the class and like be clearly very good, I think, in the coming
years. I'm not worried about SMU because Rhett Lashley, like I said, he's full of energy. They're so hyped up there. I was really bummed I had to miss the spring game, but I could just feel the energy all the way from here. So I am excited for that.
Did you see the SMU tweet where they put a gold Trans Am in the tweet?
No,
because it was chef's kiss perfect.
So their Twitter game is very strong. For those who don't know
what Eric Dickerson might have been driving back in the day,
gold Trans Am, I like it.
A little Trans Am action, and that was a little pre-death penalty SMU action. Hey, we're in a new era with NIL, rock and
new roll. Era, new time. All right, well, let's switch. That's what we got for the draft. It was great, exciting. I hope they never do it in Vegas again.
I'm sure they will.
I won't do it again. I can't. I spent Friday at Rob Gronkowski's beach party and I don't know how it was amazing, but I don't know how I survived. So I'm just like too old to be doing things like that.
And how old are you in August?
Like taking muscle chugs with the Gronk brothers.
They got to be older than you though, don't they?
I'm never going to like, nice try. Let's transition to our last topic for the podcast and talk about one of my favorite current obsessions, the USFL, the United States Football League.
Part two. It's
incredible. Well,
electric boogaloo.
Asterisk. But yes, it has been so much fun watching this league, especially with not having any football right now. So having spring football in general has been incredible. And the USFL has just done, I think, a top-notch job of bringing us, you know, exciting football. Now, granted, it's in its first year, so obviously there's going to be kinks to work out. And not all of the play has panned out the way we had hoped it would, especially at the quarterback position and then initially the kicking positions, which was an issue with the football that they sorted out. But I think special teams do matter, but having a functioning football matters as well. So that, you know, that
call
was
that something to baseball with its non-functioning baseballs that they're using.
Call that
right
to
now.
Tom Brady, I guess, and the Patriots.
First and foremost, we can talk about that if you want to talk about that.
I do not want to talk
about the Colts balls were also deflated because in cold air, that shit just happens. Second off, the rule for tampering with equipment is a $25,000 fine to the team, period, end of story. No, this 4-game suspension, loss of your first round draft pick, and $1 million fine nonsense. That was ridiculous. Thirdly, why are we letting Roger Goodell be judged during an executioner of the NFL? Ridiculous. Ridiculous.
Well, I'll tell you this. The governing bodies for the USFL have been great. Daryl Johnston, former, you know, Dallas Cowboys fullback, has been integral in this league and kind of getting across what players' safety is all about, what all this new innovation is all about. We're talking new camera angles. We're talking different rules. They just literally changed a rule this week about, you know, the time of the game. They're going to shorten game times to under 3 hours. So there will be a running clock. They tried to do this in the first weekend, but it didn't pan out, but there will be a running clock, I think, in the first and third quarter. And the clock will be kept running after an incomplete pass in the first and third quarter. So that's going to be effective immediately this weekend. So I will definitely, I'll be on the ground in Birmingham tomorrow. So I will let you guys know what that looks like.
Yeah, this college is trying to find a way to shorten games. See, his college games are regularly over 4 hours at this point.
Yeah, I'm not mad at that. Like, I'm not mad if you want to make a game
one
shorter.
That they've been talking about in colleges is, I don't know if people know this. I'm sure if they're listening to us, they at least have some idea that when you get a first down in college to reset the change, the chains rather, the clock stops after that. And with a lot of hurry up offenses that don't take time between plays at all, the games just last forever. Like,
yeah,
a hurry up offense that goes three and out takes 15 seconds off the clock, basically. You know, a hurry up offense that gets three first downs in three plays takes 25 seconds off the clock, basically. It's so fast now. Yeah, you do have to kind of like find a way to be like, okay, it's a different world, and make that experience
adapt or die, man. That's what it is. And I think that the USFL has found a perfect way of blending the excitement of football with the accessibility to fans. The mic'd up has been one of the most fun things to listen to, both on the coaches and the players, the sideline reporters. We never got this much of it ever, you know? And so they're actually doing like full parts of games. They're when they're calling plays, like the NFL, and they've always done it in warmups or like certain chunks of things, but you're getting like way more access with this. So I think it's great. I'm excited. And we've seen a few notable names from the AAC. You know, you've actually kept better tabs on some of the guys than I have. So
I've kept tabs on like the UCF guys, if we're being honest.
That's fair.
Marlon Williams, former UCF wide receiver, scored a couple of nice touchdowns. Neville Clark's been decent at corner. Just stuff like that. I've caught like parts of a couple of games, if we're being honest, because I am not great about remembering that football's on right now. I'm distracted
That's fair.
By
That's
I'm
distracted. Fair. You can always catch the highlights on my Twitter. So don't worry.
Our boy Paxton Lynch, Memphis football. Not as good.
The quarterback play has been rough. Like those guys are still definitely – now you have to understand they didn't play together. They had like 3 weeks of training camp, and that was not live action. So it's definitely going to take a little bit of time for this to settle in. But that being said, I have not been overly impressed with the quarterback play. I've been far more impressed with the fullbacks, with the secondaries have been incredibly strong.
Well, have they been incredibly strong? Have the quarterbacks been incredibly bad?
That's a fair point, but at least they're capitalizing on those opportunities. Yes.
Somewhere in the middle.
It's been fun because we've seen guys from all over the AAC, from Tulsa, from South Florida. There's been players.
Yeah.
East Carolina. There's even a Navy guy, which has been great. Sean Williams. Yes. We love to see a Navy guy. There's Brady White from Memphis. Mm-hmm. Remember good old Brady White?
I remember Brady. Memphis has multiple quarterbacks in the USFL is what that means.
And we only even one have a Temple. Temple wide receiver, Brandon Mack. So it's been fun.
Yeah. I remember Brandon Mack last time.
Yeah.
He was a lot of fun to watch in the American.
Yes, it's been really fun. So definitely, if you haven't tuned in, you should tune in, cheer on these former AAC guys, but just watch some football. It's the viewership has been incredible. I think the first weekend they hit
big numbers. Yeah.
3.5 million across all the platforms. So,
and like their numbers have been like good when you compare them to like, say, Sunday Night Baseball. The primetime baseball game or something like that. So that is a good sign if the league's going to continue, because these leagues always run into issues. I know the USFL is, I believe, NFL backed a little bit more than other leagues have been.
I don't know that they're backed, but the NFL has been out and present at the games. They're definitely hedging their bets on this and the XFL to see, where they want to partner up with. But I'll tell you this, the Fox partnership has been incredible for this league, because not only from a programming standpoint, you've got analysts.
Fox took a gamble financially on this league.
They did. And I think, honestly, I think it's going to pan out, because this league only has anywhere to go but up. The stadium is gorgeous. And this is the only year they're doing it all in Birmingham. They're going to move
the games. That's a financial constraint this year to save a little bit of money. Yeah,
it is. But it's also so you can hammer out the kinks. Like if you're in one place and you're working on the broadcasting, the officiating, the communication, if you're all in one stadium working those things out, it's going to be a lot more seamless when you have to go elsewhere and then have all these games going in different locations. So,
and interestingly enough, for those interested, they're playing the games at Legion Field and UAB's new stadium. So that's an American Conference stadium you've been going to.
I have only been to, it's the Protective Stadium is what it's called. Yes. Protective Stadium. That is the only, so we were there the first weekend, they played all the games there. I have heard they're going to go to another stadium as well, but I'm not sure. So
games at Legion Field. I could have been wrong.
I had heard that too, but as of right now, I'm pretty sure they've all been at Protective Stadium. So I don't know.
That's the nicer stadium.
It's gorgeous. Nicer than, it's really nice. So
We are going to talk at some point in the future about the new teams coming in and what we think about them for sure.
Yes.
I think very highly of what UAB is doing. Anyways,
I like UAB. Yeah. And we will have more AAC coach interviews for you guys next time. We had to take a little break this time to talk about, the draft and everything else. Mm-hmm. So just stay tuned for the next pod, because we do have more conversations with AAC head coaches, including USF's Jeff Scott. And I think we also talked to ECU's Mike Houston.
Yeah. So we have not had his interview on yet.
Yes, we'll let you know what they say, and we'll play some clips for you guys to keep you getting riled up for next season. So,
And if you do want any more USFL like coverage, follow Emily. She's been doing a great job of it for sure on Twitter.
Campaigning to be the first female in their broadcast booth. So, everyone help me out here.
Exactly. If you want any of my nonsense on Twitter, and it is nonsense, Dan_Morrison96. Emily's
at MLNEM on Twitter and Instagram, EMILNEM.
I'm going to tell you what, I was going to try to say it this time and you cut me off, and now I'm never going to try again.
I didn't want to risk it, Dan. Maybe next time.
That's fine. And that's all we have for you this week. We're off.
We'll see you next time.